Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 166th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Greta Lozada, who was born in Venezuela, raised in Miami, and now attends Maine Law School. She can speak firsthand about living for 17 years as an undocumented immigrant and how that shapes a person's life and choices. Greta, thank you for being my guest today, and welcome to New Mainers Speak.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here with you.
Delightful. And we have a special guest in the house, too. Donna Gaspar Jarvis is here just enjoying the show in the back, so we're glad to have her on board.
Yes.
Let's start back in Venezuela. What kind of enduring memories do you have of your house and your street there when you were a little girl? What kinds of things do you miss from your life there?
So I think something that I miss the most is having my family, having all of my family together, both my paternal side and my maternal side, which is not something that I've had for, most of my life. So being able to have your grandma and your grandparents there is something that definitely I miss. And even when I was there, I had a very good childhood. I was happy. And one of the things that I do remember that even at that time, it was such a the political climate was already on a rise. And basically, we couldn't even ride a bike outside. We needed to ride bike inside of our home, in our backyard, in our front yard. We couldn't go outside just because of the dangers that could be that were there.
What kinds of things would happen to children on bikes?
Anything could happen to you. Abduction. There could be somebody trying to mug you, trying to take your bike away. There's horrific stories even now, just being on, if you're on a car ride and somebody could just come up next to you and try to mug you for your wallet, for your cell phone, for something that's worthless to anyone.
Mm-hmm. So Venezuela, a very rich in oil country.
Yes.
It's kind of under a stranglehold.
Yes. One of the richest countries in the world at one point is now being ruined by greed and a government that is not helping its community. People are dying of hunger. And that's something that needs to be known worldwide because people are suffering. They're scavenging through trash cans just to be able to get a meal. And and that's something that shouldn't happen in any place of the world.
No, it shouldn't. And I think it's especially surprising for a country that has trained neurosurgeons, for example.
Correct.
And you said earlier that your uncle.
One of my uncles is a neurosurgeon that had to just recently come to the United States because of there is no medicine, there is no product, there isn't anything that he can actually work on anymore. He can't work on his patients. So he decided to come to the United States to give his family a better life. And now here he has to be trying to find work, whatever he could find work doing, Uber, anything.
Mm-hmm. The story of an immigrant losing right. all that brain power and resource
Correct.
For the community.
And there's just like him, there's millions out there, professionals that are now having to flee their country to try to find a better future for themselves and for their family, which is what every immigrant wants.
Yes. And that's why you would break up your beloved family for the opportunities.
Correct.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty common story.
Yes, it is. And it's a sad one.
It is sad. And is there anything that you know off the top of your head that's being done for people in Venezuela? Is there a people-to-people kind of connection?
I think a lot of people, if they're lucky enough, they have family somewhere else, either in the United States or in border Colombia or any of the other states, and are actually sending everyday products to them. I know my family has to send my family in Venezuela boxes of just general things that you need every day. Toilet paper, toothpaste, toothbrushes. There's no food. You go to the grocery store. Even if you had the money to obtain it, the grocery stores are wiped out. There's nothing there for them to have.
Thank you for drawing some attention to that. I don't think that's something people are thinking much about on daily life in America.
Yes.
And it breaks my heart for Venezuelans.
yes, it's a really sad state of affairs that's going on right now in Venezuela.
So you, your two brothers, and your parents left Venezuela because there were so few opportunities and it was quite dangerous to be out of step with the government's leadership there. What did you all find when you arrived in Miami at age, what, seven?
So first my dad came before me and my brothers and my mom. My dad was an immigrant that arrived to this country with $101 in his pocket. He worked three jobs a day. He used to work as a newspaper, just giving out newspapers. Then he would work at a gas station washing cars. And then after he was done washing the cars, he would go inside the gas station and work just in the front of the gas station. And through that, he was able to meet a lot of people. And he met a property manager for an association in Miami. And he is a hustler to the end and was able to obtain housing for us. We would actually go into the model homes of a association and we would go there very late at night and then leave very early in the morning and leave everything as is just so that we had some housing for a couple months. And then with that, you know, we evolved, we started school and the opportunities kept flowing and we always kept our head high no matter what. And I think having unity and family is what strengthens us and my family. No matter what, we're always there for each other.
Yes, it sounds like your father's very resourceful. Your family's been very flexible.
Yes.
And that you have a lot to be proud of as a family.
I am very proud of my family. And my mother is a go-getter. She's a hardworking woman. She's a hairstylist. And she's been working, doing that all of our lives and really has stepped up to the plate whenever we needed her.
And shouldn't we be kind of honest about hairstylists? It's like hairstylist slash family therapist?
Yes.
Yeah,
hairstylist,
counselor.
Family therapist, cleaning lady. I shouldn't say that. She's not going to be happy about that.
Because you have to clean up all that hair.
Right, right. But yeah, she is one of a kind. She does it all.
Gotta love the moms out there.
That's right. I mean, without them, well, where would we be?
I don't know. Right out of high school, you had actually limited choices because of your undocumented status. Looking at schools, you had to consider international charges that would be applied to students because you didn't have your residency or citizenship here. But you found a community college that would accept you, and you took your first step toward your dream of becoming a lawyer, studying as a paralegal. Tell us about your paralegal career and how that's shaped you and head you toward law.
So basically, right when I got out of high school, I always wanted to be an attorney. So I started working. I would work as a file clerk, just answering phones at a law firm right out of high school. And that helped me get the money I needed to pay for the schooling that I was doing after work. And really that paralegal career really shaped me on who I am today, because without it, I don't think I would be so happy of the career that I chose, and I wouldn't be so into it. And it really did just validate the fact that that's who I am and who I want to be. It's a great attorney. I want to be a good example to my field, and I want people to recognize that attorneys are not just an attorney joke. We are an example to the community. We're here to help, and we really do want to do the best for our communities.
It's hard to imagine all the different responsibilities lawyers have. They do get a bad rap, don't they?
They do. They get a bad rep unnecessarily, I think, sometimes. And like everything, there's always bad apples in the bunch. And I think that the new generation coming in of attorneys is a powerful one. And we have to take advantage of the resources we have around and that we have so that we can be a good example to the ones that will follow.
You're kind of the stewards of policy, and policy is law, justice.
Correct.
You know, how are you supposed to have a just society without good policies?
Yeah, and that's what makes this career so fruitful, that we have so many venues that we can go through, and we could really help out not just our communities, but our states and our country and the world. So,
Greta, I don't believe that your father's the only hustler in the family. That's pretty impressive that right out of high school you had a plan and you funded your own plan through work, and you went associate's degree first and then bachelor's degree and then paralegal career.
Yes.
And then here you are, about 10 years as a paralegal you did?
10 years as a paralegal.
I bet they were glad to get you here at this graduate school. You bring a lot of experience.
Yes, yes. I think that that is something that really did give me an upper hand. And it is giving me an upper hand now in law school, because I kind of understand the backside of what we're learning. And it has been very helpful thus far.
And personally, the real reason...
Yes.
That you're bothering to learn it.
Yes.
To change people's lives.
Completely and absolutely. That is important to me, just trying to help anyone that I could. And doing that through law is a dream come true.
I like the power in your hands. You became a citizen of the United States in 2013 at a ceremony in Florida. And I wondered if you could tell us about your journey to citizenship and what that day in particular meant to you.
So I think my journey to citizenship was one that a lot of people have had. I was married. I got my residency, and through marriage, I was able to obtain my citizenship. Obtaining my citizenship was a dream come true. Another dream that I had. I mean, when you make wishes on your birthday, that's what I wish for, to be a citizen of the United States. This is my country. The United States to me is my country. And I couldn't wait till the day that I could have a voice and I could vote and I can just be able to feel. I already felt like I was a citizen and I was part of the United States, but having that paper just meant the world to me.
I bet you have a tremendous amount of empathy for the DACA students.
Unbelievable. I remember when I was in high school, I actually would write emails to congressmen and senators trying to get this bill to pass. And when I heard that they had something going on in the works, I was so happy that somebody was going to have the opportunity and wouldn't have to go through all the trouble that I did and spending all the money that I did. And that's something that I like to do now. I like to help out high school students who may be in my same situation and just guide them through and show them that there is, no matter what, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You just have to look for the choices that are going to be better for you.
And write to your senators.
Right.
What
to
a
your
good
senators.
Idea.
I mean,
self-actualize,
right, call them.
Greta.
Right. Call them. And they need to know that your voice is important, too.
Yeah.
Because once you become a citizen like me, you'll be voting for them.
And you became a citizen through marriage. Mm-hmm. But your brothers had a different track. Can you tell us how your brother got the fast track to citizenship?
Right. So my older brother, I have two brothers. My older brother is... also is married, has children. He actually was a resident, and then he joined the Army, and a week later he became a citizen, and that's actually how my parents were able to obtain their citizenship after their residency after he became a citizen through the Army. So the Army does help facilitate the process of becoming a citizen much faster than anybody else could.
Yeah, I've had a couple guests on the show whose goal was to become a member of the U.S. Army, almost instant citizenship,
mm-hmm.
which I just find fascinating.
Right.
It just means kind of anyone can show up and become an inside the military mind.
Yeah, that is the American way.
It also is a policy statement, isn't it? Like,
right.
What we value.
Right. I mean, we are not allowed to drink, but we are allowed to go ahead and join the Army and become a citizen of the United States and have these great responsibilities on our shoulders at the age of 18. Somebody that might not have made the correct choices, it doesn't even know what they're doing at the time, is now joining the armed forces. And that's why there's a lot of instability, mental instability after being there for so long.
Yeah, that's what the research shows, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The more unstable your childhood has been, the more
yes.
difficult your post-war experience is. So if you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You are listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Greta Lozada, a student attorney at the Sam L. Cohen Refugee and Human Rights Clinic at the University of Southern Maine, right here in Portland. Earlier, Greta, you told me that you put 20 hours a week in at the free clinic. Can you tell us, generally speaking, who you're serving and what kinds of legal services immigrants in the area are needing help with?
So the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic is a clinic that we have at our school, and basically it has different branches within it. One of them is the Refugee and Human Rights Clinic, which is where I will be working this next semester. We also have a general practice, we have a juvenile assistance, and we have a prisoner's assistance. So each one of those branches has their own components, and they help out everyone in the community that needs help, and it's a in the Refugee and Human Rights Clinic, we help low-income immigrants in an array of cases, from asylum seekers to marriage petitions and juveniles who are asking for status as well, obtaining status.
Mm-hmm. Children who've been brought undocumented.
Who have been brought undocumented, but that have been brought by themselves, who are abandoned, basically.
I see. Mm-hmm. Wow. What do they do without you?
Well, I mean, there's other, I mean, in every state, there is also other local legal aid clinics that help out in the same way that we do.
The Pine Tree Legal.
The Pine Tree Legal, ILAP, and some like that here in the state of Maine. So basically, we try to help as many as we could, but we are all just students, and we are under the supervision of our wonderful clinical professor, Anna Welsh, who is magnificent. So she tries her best to juggle trying to obtain new clients and help as many as we can, and trying to teach us the ropes and how to do this work correctly. And it's just a great work what we do. And we also get to be the attorneys. So for the first time in law school, we're able to step into our roles and really become the attorney that we're meant to be. And I think giving back to the community is an exceptional and amazing way to do it.
It's a wonderful win-win, right?
Right.
You learn as a student, and people who can't otherwise afford it get pretty important legal help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's you don't know the value of an attorney until you need one, until you need someone to be the voice that represents you and that really fights for you and goes out there and shows, you know, that they care.
Yeah, when you're most vulnerable.
Right.
Absolutely. As part of your training, you went to Laredo, Texas for 2 weeks last summer to represent people being held at an immigration detention center. What can you tell us about the lives of the undocumented people that you met there and the work you did there?
So I spent 2 weeks in Laredo. This was a collaboration between a firm, Jones Day, and the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. And basically, we were there meeting women who had been through horrific stories of rape, gang violence, domestic violence, as well as routine ICE stops. For any reason, I mean, for taking a stop sign, you could be stopped, asked for your documentation, and arrested. And so now they were in this detention center, being held, waiting for to be being heard for from an immigration judge, and trying to figure out what their status would be. So what we did, we would go ahead, listen to their stories, and then see if there was some sort of relief that we can help them out with. And then if there was some pathway that they could possibly have, they would take on the case and they would work on that case pro bono. And right now, that is the only help that they are getting. That center also has males. And sometimes it's a problem to have women and men being heard, and being able to obtain just a meeting with their attorneys, because if a male is in a room, a female can't come into the room, a female can't see her attorney. So at times we would be 3-4 hours just or more waiting to see a client.
Why can't they be in the same room together?
I think it's just policy from the center itself, just not to have women and men in the same visiting rooms. They wouldn't be in the same room. They would be in separate rooms. But even then, they didn't feel like that was appropriate, having male and women there. I think it might be for their protection.
Sounds like emotionally grueling work as well, to take on these stories of people who've been through so much. You could easily get, you know, secondary trauma.
Yes,
from
absolutely.
Hearing so many hard stories.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we do as attorneys. We hear these horrific stories, and we need to make sure to apply some self-care and make sure that we are okay, because the stories that we hear are not okay. And like I said, they're very traumatic, and self-care is definitely something that needs to always be taken care of.
Yeah, you know, sometimes lawyers are called counselors. Right.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I think that that's interesting, because it seems like you do a lot of counseling. You're working with a couple that's highly emotional through a divorce, or
correct.
Someone that's lost a loved one and is doing a wrongful death claim, or, you know, whatever. You're working with tough stories.
Yes. I think applying some empathy to the cases, you know, having that connection with your client, being able to show them that you do care, that you're there to help them, is very valuable as an attorney to show. Sometimes we want them to see us as somebody of respect, someone that's going to be on their side, but we also need to show that friendship that we have, and that we do care for them as well.
Make that human connection. I bet you're great at that part. Next spring you will finish at Maine Law, and I wonder what's next for you after that. What are you dreaming of next?
So my dreams are maybe one day to become a judge. I think that would be amazing. And leaving Portland and Maine, I'm thinking moving to the D.C. area. I would like to be there and try to put my law degree into practice and really make a difference in that way.
And when you get on the Supreme Court, can I come visit you there?
Of course. I hope everyone comes to visit me there.
Oh, Greta, you're an amazingly committed and modest person. I think we only know about half of what you're actually doing to build a healthy community and healthy country around yourself. Thank you for doing the work you do with such integrity and authenticity for some of Maine's most vulnerable people.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you'd like to listen to this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, visit newmainerspeak.com and check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. New Mainers Speak is also rebroadcast on Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on WERU-FM in the Blue Hill and Bangor area. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Greta has selected for us. I wondered if you could introduce this song and say why you chose this one.
So this song is a Spanglish song, it talks about freedom and finding liberty and being happy where you are and what you've become. So that's why I chose this wonderful song. It has some Cuban rhythms, so I love to dance, and I thought that this would be a great song.
Thank you. And it is called?
Cubaneras. Y me siento bien.
Ver aves volar, sabes qué sentí. Sol en el cielo, sabes qué sentí. Brisa que acaricia. Sabes que sentí. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life para mí. Y me siento bien. Peces en el mar. Correr, sabes que sentí, flores en árboles, sabes que sentí, it's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life para mí, y me siento libélulas en el sol. A eso me refiero yo, no es así. Mariposa en diversión, a eso me refiero yo. Dormir en paz cuando el día termina, a eso me refiero. This old war is a new war and the bold one para mí. Siento bien.